our spiritual home, the place where we take time every week to gather and do this together, where we wonder and talk and ask questions and tend to our wounds and try to do the right thing, a place where we endeavor to open our hearts and our minds over and over again, a place where we make mistakes, apologize, where we are forgiven because no one's perfect, a place where all are welcome to bring their whole self, even though it'd be so much easier if we all thought alike. But then again, that might be just a bit creepy. Stepford-like-ish, and no one wants that. As Unitarian Universalists, we revel in the diversity of mind, body, and spirit. Spirit, spiritual, sacred, secular. Words such as spirit, God, religion, faith have been co-opted by communities unlike ours that are judgmental and damning. And so for you, these words can feel unavailable to us because their meanings have been twisted. So I try to think of different ways to describe the animating energy of the universe for all of our different ears. But I come back to spirit. I endeavor to make it non-denominational, non-creedal, and I know that spiritual pushes buttons for some. I want this place to be safe for all. I seek that sweet spot, but I have seen visitors leave because they needed more Jesus or less Jesus, more faith or less spirit. Try as I might, I can't put spirit or spiritual away. That essence that animates us, that connects us, that fills our secular souls, that calls us to be our better selves, ever striving forward. We are a community, and yet First Parish is different than a gym, a library, the Dunkin' Donuts. Here at these crossroads, we go deeper, and at times we tread on sacred holy ground. 327 Concord Road, this meeting house is our home, be it spiritual for any one of us or not. If we claim First Parish as our historic home, how can we care for it into perpetuity? Care for it another 1,000 years, let's say. What are our obligations? The work that being a member requires, the nuts and the bolts. First, we must focus on the needs of this moment, but keep an eye on the future. By committing our participation to the resolve and the needs of today, this week, this year, this decade, to better understand, I will pull back that curtain of congregational polity this morning to give you a peek at our governance. Ooh, what a topic. Why would she talk about governance today, you may wonder? Because right after worship today, we will be participating in our annual meeting. Think of it kind of like jury duty, but more fun. If you are a member, it is incredibly important for you to make the commitment to show up and participate in today's meeting. Yes, I'm speaking to you. And we have childcare. The annual meeting is a time when we make decisions that will affect our upcoming year. Such as whether to approve the budget, modify it, or share thoughts and concerns about specific ways in which First Parish operates. It gives the newcomer a sense of what it takes to keep the lights on and the heat going in the middle of winter. Governance. Every UU congregation is self-governing. We do not have a Vatican that tells us how to operate or sends us big checks. And what to believe or what to focus on, that's sort of the nice side of the equation. We have a board of trustees nominated from our own membership who are our leaders. The board helps to sort out the day-to-day work, strategic thinking, finances, and organization of First Parish and the meeting house. Today, if you're a member, you will be able to vote for an addition of 3 new board members, as 3 of our members of the board are cycling off: Tom Arnold, Susan Kernan, and Sheila Murphy. What I'd like to invite you to do is, if you see any of these members, although you have to fly to Colorado to see Tom, Please take a moment to thank them for their service, because honestly, they have worked their butts off this year. The new potential slate, as we call it, of board members have been nominated by a committee that helps to develop and encourage leadership here at First Parish, aptly named the Nominating Committee. These committed souls will be presented to you today for your consideration and confirmation, signified by a vote. They have also found an excellent candidate, Emarie Pope, to become our next treasurer. We thank you for your willingness to serve. Please rise. With that said, it breaks my heart to say that Liz Russ, please rise. Okay, please pop. Is leaving the treasurer position, but we thank you for your service. I remember when I first came to Unitarian Universalist Church many, many years ago, and I fell in love with the community. How many people have come here and just love the community, right? I fell in love with the community. I thought it was an amazing group of people gathered with the express hope of making the world a better place and to care for one another. They welcomed and accepted me with open arms for who I am. I arrived at the Arlington Street Church Sanctuary at the invitation of a friend. How many people arrived here on an invitation? It's pretty amazing. That invitation changed my life. The words that came from the minister were like salve for my soul, and I was literally in awe. Awe was roses and chocolate at Arlington Street. And then this time of the year rolled around, and there was a sense of anxiety and excitement that existed in the congregation, and it was palpable, specifically around what might be brought up at the annual meeting and how to deal with thus and such if it were. As a newly minted UU, I did not have a good grasp that this congregation that I loved governed itself. I had no idea what took place behind the curtain of leadership and the hard decisions that were being made on a daily basis. I was stuck because of my Catholic background in thinking that there had to be some grand governing body on high, a Vatican per se. The week before the annual meeting, way back when, all of the old stories started to surface, murmured about in hushed tones during social hour. Do you remember that time when John jumped up out of order and the moderator had to have him physically removed from the meeting? What? Yup, annual meetings can absolutely get contentious. You prepared? To tell you the truth, that year I was compelled to go to the annual meeting just to see what might happen. You know, like when you were in high school and you hung around the school grounds afterward, just waiting for something, anything to happen? Let me explain that the goal of our leadership is to make the annual meeting as short and uneventful as possible. However, if you do need a little anxiety to motivate you to attend, because we need a quorum, which basically means a good portion of the voting members must be here, then let me say this. One never really knows what might happen at the annual meeting, and it's worth attending to find out. Since we have several new members this year, and I'm not sure how many of you know about governance of a UU congregation and the process of an annual meeting, I thought this morning might be a good time to share with you some of my thoughts and accumulated knowledge about how it works. First, as I mentioned, there is a board of trustees. Who are our board of trustees that are here this morning? Raise your hands. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. The Board of Trustees are our big bosses at First Parish. The chair of the board this year was Tom Arnold and has now transitioned to Craig Parkhill. Craig, stand up. Thank you. I work in direct coordination with the board, and they annually review my performance, and in June we signed a contract covenant for my continued service as your minister for the next year. Every UU Meeting House Church, as well as the UUA, our National Administrative Headquarters, has an annual meeting. Most of these meetings take place at some point between the end of May and the end of June. At the annual meeting on the local or national level every year, there's a bit of shift in leadership, which is a really good thing. It allows each one of you, all of you who are members, to share in the commitment of governing your community of hope and love. On the other side of the aisle from the board is the minister, me. I am the spiritual leader of the congregation, and I also serve as the chief of staff per the request of the board. So if you have questions or comments or feedback about any member of our staff, please come speak to me, call me, send me an email or a text. If you have a question or comments or feedback about me, please feel free to come to me, or you can also speak with members of the Committee on Ministry, Tom Kreskel, Scylla Rising, Celia Heinrichs, Scott Prince. This team has really worked hard this year, and they continue to work hard to help redefine how they operate and support ministry here at First Parish, and I'm so grateful to have them. A common misconception from members is that the minister is the big boss, the CEO per se, and this is just not true. I work at the behest of the Board of Trustees. However, if you bring a concern to me about, or an idea about that is within the board's purview, which means the daily secular mechanics of First Parish, I'm sure that I will have an idea or a recommendation or two, and I can help advocate with the board from a spiritual and justice-based perspective. Things such as whether we put solar on the roof, banners up in front of the building, add a terrace to the front of the meeting house, remodel the kitchen, or take on some specific community work are a collaboration between the secular and the spiritual. We self-govern using a democratic process of raising our hands. We adhere to a set of unique First Parish specific bylaws, which are ever-evolving policies that help to inform and guide us. If the members of First Parish, also known as the congregation, want to change a bylaw, call a new minister, or make any changes, it requires a vote from a quorum of members. We actually vote on many different things as a congregation, such as accepting the budget, we vote members into leadership for the upcoming year, we vote to allocate spending on specific projects, and we air any issues that may need to be addressed by the congregation as a whole during the annual meeting. For example, we talked about the possibility of solar energy at an annual meeting way before it became a reality this year. Bruce, when was the first time we started talking about solar at the annual meeting?
4 years ago.
4 years ago. So it's a process. We're in a process together. Imagine that we all have our own opinions and agendas. Is that hard to imagine? And we have the potential to disagree, maybe. That's always there. Any member can request from our moderator, Sherry Klein, please stand. She is our moderator, and we thank her greatly, which can be affirming, fun, and derailing at times. I have been done that myself. If there is some sort of contentious discussion that breaks out, that is why the annual meeting is a time when we dust off our copy of what is called Robert's Rules. Does anybody know Robert's Rules? Anybody who's a member knows Robert's Rules. How many of you heard of Robert's Rules? So for those of you who haven't, let me take a second to educate. It is a manual of order, the process of which is ensured by our moderator. The first edition of the book was published in February, guess the year, anyone? 1876. By then, U.S. Army Major Henry Martin Robert, with a short title, Robert's Rules of Order, created his little book. The procedures prescribed by the book were loosely modeled after those used in the United States House of Representatives, with such adaptations as Robert saw fit for use in ordinary societies. The author's interest in parliamentary procedure began in 1863, when he was chosen to preside, guess what, over a church meeting. And although he accepted the task, felt that he did not have the necessary knowledge or proper procedure. Apparently, church annual meetings have been quite contentious throughout history, so says Robert. Personally, I was surprised by Robert's Rules when I first encountered them at Arlington Street Church. I was surprised at the power that each member held within this democratic process. I can imagine that some of you that are newcomers will be equally as surprised to find such a form of democratic governance. To help conduct the process of our annual meeting, Sherry Klein, who is our elected moderator, will lead us, as she has done for the last couple of years. Sherry is an attorney and can facilitate keeping a sense of order, and she knows how to wield a gavel. I've been asked why, many times in my ministry, a congregation needs to act so much like a corporation. Well, we are a not-for-profit volunteer organization, and the truth is that in order to get the business of our community done, there needs to be a structure in place in order to order supplies, to pay bills for things like heating, insurance, salaries for staff, keeping our meeting house in good repair. As a congregation, you own this building. You own this land. You have a staff, a congregational administrator, Fran Sharp, a minister, thank you. A minister. A director of religious education. Let's scream loud so he can hear us. Woo-hoo! And a music director. Where is she? We all work together, but even with a staff that work to decide of the work of deciding and steering First Parish isn't ours, it's yours. The building is owned and maintained by its members. You who have signed the book are responsible for all of this together. We are each a stakeholder of something larger than ourselves, a member of a system where all who participate have an interest in its success. This is why we each have a responsibility to volunteer and to show up, because we are the ones that are ultimately responsible for this meeting house, the place that I refer to as our spiritual home. I often wonder if the work of the congregation is enough, if the social justice is enough, the message on Sunday, is that enough? And our religious education, is that enough to feed our spiritual selves? The yoga, the Tai Chi, the meditation, the book groups, the seekers gatherings, the adult education, is it enough to feed our spiritual selves? It is so easy for us to fall into the work of First Parish and not to participate in the important parts of being cared for. At the end of the day, it is essential to realize that if the work is too overwhelming, or if one does not feel that he or she has participated enough to feel like a stakeholder, and or you are not spiritually being fed, then your balance is off, which throws off the balance for all of us. Think about us as a big ship. We all want to be in balance together. We are all interdependent, so informed by our seventh UU principle. We need to take care of one another because we are ultimately one. We have chosen to be one. I can stand in this pulpit and inspire and encourage you to do the work, enjoy the play, delve deep into your life, finding those places of meaning-making, but I cannot make you. You must choose to make yourself a commitment. That part of yourself, that transcendent self, that is who you have to make a commitment to. Maybe some of us call that part of us spiritual. Only you can communicate what you need to one another and to me. And if you do feel inspired, fed, or if you feel over or underwhelmed, don't run away. This is the time to take a step closer, to help envision the community and theology of your heart. You each make the choice to be in relationship with one another and with me each and every week. Here is a truth. First Parish will not survive the test of time, not alone thrive, without our collective commitment to maintaining it, growing it, evolving it, making it the place that each one of us dreams of. It takes our commitment and our willingness to show up over and over again. We can do this work together. We have done this work together. And my friends, it shows. There is more growth in membership this year than in the preceding decade. Yeah, you can do that. And it feels good. It's incredible, and it takes all of us to make this happen. This morning, as I was doing the last review of My sermon, Craig Parkhill came in to me and said, my grandson Oliver wants to sign the book to become a member. I literally like threw my stuff. And I ran and I grabbed the book and I said, oh yeah, we're going to do this. And Oliver had this huge smile on his face as he signed the book, and his parents were so proud, and they took pictures. We took a picture, and it just made my heart swell with joy for his family and for us. As your minister, my work is to walk with each one of you on this journey, to nudge you at times and soothe you at others. I can only do my ministry effectively if we each choose to consciously engage in the journey, commit over and over again to this time and place, to these people, to the work of being in relationship. There's a Zen koan that I'd like to share with you. A koan is a Buddhist meditative teaching, and it's thought to bring about enlightenment if heard and understood on its most basic and complex levels in the same moment. Are you ready for such a moment of enlightenment? A monk asked Zhaozhou, a famous teacher, to teach him. Zhaozhou asked, "Have you eaten your meal?" The monk replied, "Yes, I have." "Then go wash your bowl," said Zhaozhou. At that moment, the monk was enlightened. "Then go wash your bowl. Empty yourself. Become filled. Step. Move forward, doing the next logical thing. And in that doing, we will each realize our deepest truths if we are present and open to them. Being with one another helps us do that." What is a spiritual home? It is this place where we are mindfully present, this place where we meet and work and struggle and strive to engage in the caring for ourselves in relation to one another. In my opinion, realizing one's spiritual home is as easy as washing that bowl. It is a decision that is made in this moment to mindfully and with intention do what needs to be done. And in the act of making that decision over and over, and in doing, we become part of this grand growing family. This place which exemplifies our beliefs of inclusivity, liberal religious thought, and theology. This place at the crossroads is our mirror. It reflects the truth, a truth that can set us free if we're able to be so bold, be so open enough to look into the face of one another and see our reflection in all of our collective glory, grace, and imperfection, and love who we are together. This morning, I invite you to roll up your sleeves, to volunteer, show up, and to work as if your soul and the soul of humanity depended upon our efforts. This may be our little slice of heaven, our effort at building the beloved community. Let us walk our talk and be the change that our world so desperately needs. It begins with one little word. Yes. 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 Thank you, friends, for all that you do. Let us take a moment in silent reflection and meditation. For this we pray, may it be so, blessed be. Amen.